A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He spent his summers assembling photo frames in the back of a framing shop in Cork, and now, after 10 years of renting, his own walls are basically bare. Not because he doesn't want art up, but because the deposit anxiety is real. His mum swears by command strips they've never quite worked for him, and he's asking what, actually, reliably lets a renter make a space feel like home without kissing the security deposit goodbye. Which is one of those questions that feels small until you realize it's really about whether you're allowed to live in the place you pay to live in.
The stakes are higher than people think. Zillow put out data in 2025 showing the average U.S. renter now stays in the same unit for 5.2 years. That's half a decade. Half a decade of staring at bare walls because you're scared of a $100 deduction when you move out. The math on that is terrible.
5 years of living, like you're in a hotel room you didn't choose the decor for. There's a mental health dimension here that nobody talks about in the adhesive aisle at the hardware store.
Right, and the default advice is almost always, just use command strips, which works brilliantly for some people and fails catastrophically for others. So today I want to do three things. 1. Explain the actual material science of why these adhesive systems fail, because it's genuinely fascinating and it's not just user error. 2. Walk through what tenancy law actually says about wall damage versus wear and tear, because the fear is wildly disproportionate to the legal reality. And 3. Give people a practical decision tree. What to use at different weight levels, what to avoid, and how to patch a hole so your landlord never knows it was there.
The thesis, if we're going to state it up front, is that the conventional wisdom is backwards. Command strips are fine for posters and very light frames on smooth walls, but for anything over about 2 pounds, a small nail or a monkey hook is actually safer for your deposit than an adhesive strip, which sounds wrong until you understand peel force.
This is where it gets good. So let's start with the physics, because the failure mode of command strips is not the glue wasn't sticky enough. It's a much more interesting problem.
Take us to adhesive school, Herman.
Command strips use acrylic foam tape, which is a viscoelastic material. Viscoelastic means it behaves like a solid under some conditions and like a liquid under others. Specifically, it's designed to dissipate shear force, force applied parallel to the wall, like gravity pulling straight down on a frame. In shear, the adhesive basically laughs at you. It can hold quite a bit. But peel force, force applied perpendicular to the wall, prying the strip away from the surface, is a completely different story. The material has almost no resistance to peel.
The strip is strong in exactly the direction that gravity isn't pulling, and weak in exactly the direction that a slightly tilted frame or a bump from someone's shoulder applies force.
That's it exactly. Think of it like an envelope. Sliding it across a table takes almost no effort. That's shear. Prying it open with your finger breaks the seal. That's peel. Command strips are the envelope seal. Great at resisting sliding. Terrible at resisting prying. And here's the problem. When you hang a frame, it's never perfectly flush against the wall, even a 1 degree tilt forward, which you get from the frame's own thickness, from an uneven wall, from the hanging wire creating a pivot point, converts some of that gravitational shear force into peel force. The strip is now fighting a battle it was not designed to win.
It loses that battle slowly, or all at once.
Both, actually, and that's the insidious part. There are three main failure modes. First, surface contamination. This is the one everyone sort of knows about. Dust, humidity, the type of paint on the wall. But the specific thing most people don't know is that matte paint, especially low VOC matte paint, is a disaster for adhesives. The surface is microscopically rough and porous, so the adhesive can't make full contact. There was an ASTM D333 zero peel adhesion study in 2024 that found command strips rated for 4 pounds lose about 40% of their holding force on textured walls and up to 60% on walls painted with low VOC matte paint, which is almost certainly what your rental has, because landlords buy the cheapest paint available, and that's usually low. VOC matte in some shade of Landlord Beige.
Landlord Beige, the glockenspiel of corporate approachability.
So right out of the gate, your 4-pound rated strip is actually good for maybe 1.6 pounds if you're on a textured matte wall, and most frame prints with glass weigh between 2 and 4 pounds. You're already in the danger zone before you've even let go of the frame.
That's before we get to temperature.
That's failure mode 2. Acrylic foam adhesives have a glass transition temperature, the point where they shift from rigid to soft and rubbery. For command strips, that's around 85 degrees Fahrenheit. Above that, the adhesive creeps. It slowly deforms under load, like a very, very slow liquid. So if your frame is on a wall that gets afternoon sun, or above a radiator, or in a room that gets warm in summer, the strip is gradually, invisibly losing its grip. Below about 40 degrees Fahrenheit, the adhesive becomes brittle and can fracture. So you've got a narrow operating window where the stated weight rating actually applies.
A south-facing wall in a Dublin apartment, which, knowing Daniel, might well be the scenario, is basically a command strip death trap. Sun heats the wall, adhesive creeps, frame tilts forward just a fraction more, peel force increases, and one day you're sitting there and you hear that horrible thud.
That brings us to failure mode 3, which is the one that really gets me. The stretch release mechanism. You know how you're supposed to pull the tab straight down, parallel to the wall, and the strip stretches and releases. That works beautifully when the strip is under zero load. But if the strip is currently holding a frame, the adhesive is already under tension. The required removal angle, straight down, no pulling away from the wall, is physically impossible to maintain because the weight of the frame is creating a pivot point. So when you try to remove a strip that's under load, you end up applying peel force, the strip snaps, and now you've got a half-stretched adhesive mess bonded to your wall. And removing that residue is where the real wall damage happens.
Which is the cruel irony. The thing that's supposed to protect your deposit is the thing that ends up costing you more than a nail hole ever would.
There's a concept in material science called adhesive hysteresis, the difference between the energy required to form an adhesive bond and the energy required to break it. With these acrylic foams, the bond actually strengthens over time as the adhesive flows into the surface microstructure. So a strip that's been on the wall for 6 months has a stronger bond than one that's been there for 6 hours. But the rated holding force doesn't change. So you get this situation where the strip has been holding fine for months, and then a single thermal event, one hot afternoon, one cold snap, pushes it past the threshold, and it fails suddenly, at 3 in the morning, scaring everyone in the apartment.
The adhesive equivalent of it was fine until it very much wasn't. So, we've established that command strips are less reliable than advertised for anything with real weight, especially on rental-grade walls. But the question Daniel's really asking is, what do I do instead? And the fear underneath that question is, if I put a hole in the wall, I lose my deposit. Is that even true?
In most cases, no. And this is where the legal reality is surprising to most renters. In California, Civil Code 1950.5 subsection B2 explicitly states that landlords can only deduct for damage beyond ordinary wear and tear. And small nail holes, specifically holes under 1/8 of an inch, are consistently treated in case law as ordinary wear and tear. The UK's Tenant Fees Act 2019, Schedule 1, prohibits landlords from charging for fair wear and tear. Ireland's Residential Tenancies Act, 2004, Section 12, Subsection 1c, same principle. The standard is, if a reasonable person would consider it normal use of the property, it's wear and tear, not damage.
The legal system has basically already decided that hanging a picture is normal human behavior, not property destruction.
And here's the thing. The actual worst-case financial scenario for a nail hole is not lose your entire deposit. A small container of spackle costs about $4. A sample pot of color matched paint is about $5. A putty knife is $3. Total materials to patch and paint a nail hole, about 50 cents per hole, and maybe 10 minutes of labor including drying time. Even if your landlord charges you for it, the deduction for a few small holes should be negligible. The fear is dramatically outsized relative to the actual financial risk.
This assumes you know how to patch a hole properly, and I think a lot of renters don't, which is part of why the fear persists.
It's easy. Spackle. Let it dry, sand it flat, dab of paint. The key is getting the paint match right. Before you move in, take a photo of the paint can if the landlord left one, or chip off a tiny flake. like fingernail-sized, and take it to a paint store for matching. Keep the paint code. When you move out, you spend an hour touching up, and the wall looks exactly like it did when you arrived.
The photo is a good call. Document everything before you hang anything. That's your deposit protection right there. Timestamp photos of every wall.
If the science says adhesives are unreliable above about 2 pounds, and the law says small holes are fine, the question becomes, what systems should you actually use?
This is where we get into the fun hardware store stuff. You mentioned monkey hooks earlier. What are those?
Monkey hooks are brilliant. They're a curved steel wire with a sharp point. You push the point into the drywall by hand, no drill required, and then rotate it upward behind the wall. The curve of the wire acts as a lever, distributing the weight across the back of the drywall panel. A single monkey hook creates a hole that's about 1/16 of an inch, smaller than a typical nail hole, and it's rated for up to 45 pounds on standard half-inch drywall.
45 pounds from a pinhole? That's absurd.
It's physics. The lever principle means the weight is pulling against the back of the drywall, not against the edge of the hole, so the drywall itself is doing the work, not the fastener. For most framed art, even large pieces with glass, you're talking about maybe 10 to 15 pounds. A monkey hook is dramatically over-engineered for that. And when you move out, you pull it out, you've got a tiny hole that takes 30 seconds to spackle.
If you can't use anything that penetrates the wall at all, some leases explicitly prohibit it, or you've got concrete walls, or you're just not comfortable with it.
For very light items, under 2 pounds, command strips are fine if you follow the preparation steps that most people skip. Clean the wall with isopropyl alcohol, let it dry completely, apply the strip, press firmly for 30 seconds, and then, this is the part nobody does, wait 24 hours before hanging anything on it. The adhesive needs time to flow into the surface microstructure. If you hang the frame immediately, you're loading the bond before it's fully formed.
The instructions on the box are basically aspirational.
They're accurate, but they're written for ideal conditions that almost no rental wall actually has. For anything between 2 and 10 pounds, I'd go with monkey hooks or OOK self-leveling hooks. OOK makes these little brass hooks with a built-in leveling system. You tap a small nail into the wall at an angle, and the hook has a pivot that lets you adjust the frame's position without rehammering. Very satisfying to use.
For the heavy stuff? Big mirrors? Large canvases? Anything over 10 pounds?
It's a two-part metal bracket. One piece mounts to the wall with screws, the other mounts to the back of the frame. The wall piece has a 45-degree bevel, and the frame piece slots onto it. The weight of the frame actually pulls the two pieces tighter together. A properly installed French cleat with two screws into studs or toggle bolts can hold 50, 60, even 100 pounds. And when you move out, you remove two screws, spackle two holes, done.
Toggle bolts for when you can't hit a stud?
Toggle bolts are for hollow drywall. You drill a small hole, insert the toggle, which is a spring-loaded wing nut, and when it pops open behind the drywall, it distributes the load across a much larger area than a screw alone. A single quarter-inch toggle bolt and half-inch drywall can hold over 100 pounds in shear. The hole is about half an inch, so you do need to patch it, but again, spackle, sand, paint.
The hierarchy is, under 2 pounds, command strips with proper prep. 2 to 10 pounds, monkey hooks or OOK hooks. Over 10 pounds, French cleat with toggle bolts or stud screws. And in all cases, patch before move.
It really is. But there's a whole ecosystem of zero penetration options for people who absolutely cannot or will not put holes in walls, and some of these are clever enough to be worth mentioning. Museum putty. It's a non-drying, removable, adhesive putty that museums use to keep objects from vibrating off shelves during earthquakes. It'll hold a small frame or a decorative object on a shelf or mantle. It won't hold anything on a vertical wall, but for shelf styling, it's great.
The earthquake proofing of domestic tranquility.
There's also magnetic paint. You paint a section of wall with iron-infused primer, then paint over it with your wall color. It's invisible, and then you can use magnetic frames or magnetic hanging discs to attach art. Zero holes, repositionable, completely reversible. The downside is you need several coats of the magnetic paint to get enough holding force for anything heavier than a poster, and it's more expensive than just patching a hole.
For the truly committed renter, who wants a gallery wall without touching the walls at all?
Tension rod systems. You mount vertical tension rods from floor to ceiling, think shower curtain rods but nicer, and then hang horizontal rods or wires between them. You can create an entire gallery wall that's suspended in front of the actual wall, touching nothing but the floor and ceiling. It's more involved to set up, but it's completely reversible, and you can reconfigure it endlessly.
That's the rental equivalent of building a false floor for cable management. Over-engineered, but deeply satisfying.
I should mention, for Daniel specifically, since he's in Jerusalem, the wall type matters a lot. A lot of Israeli apartments have concrete or block walls, not drywall. Monkey hooks don't work in concrete. For concrete, you need masonry screws or adhesive systems designed for mineral surfaces. The physics changes completely.
The decision tree has to account for wall type. Drywall versus plaster versus concrete versus brick. Different fastener, different approach. But the principle is the same. A small, repairable hole is almost always safer than hoping an adhesive holds.
Let me give you a real case study that illustrates why. There was a renter in San Francisco who hung a 12-pound mirror using 4 monkey hooks. The landlord tried to deduct $200 for wall damage at move-out. The renter took it to small claims court. The ruling was in the renter's favor because the holes were smaller than a quarter inch, they were patched before move, out, and the court considered them ordinary wear and tear. The landlord got nothing.
$200 for 4 pinholes. That's the kind of landlord behavior that makes people afraid to hang anything.
That's exactly why knowing the law matters. The landlord can try to charge you, but if you know the statute, you can push back. In California, the landlord also has to provide an itemized statement of deductions within 21 days of move out, with receipts. If they don't, you can sue for up to 3 times the deposit. Most renters don't know this, so they just eat the charge.
The legal literacy is as important as the hardware literacy. Know what your jurisdiction considers. Wear and tear. Document everything, and don't assume the landlord's interpretation is correct.
Here's the psychological reframe I think is really important. Daniel said he's been renting for more than 10 years, and his walls are Spartan because the risk doesn't seem worth taking. But if you're going to be in a place for 5 years, spending $20 on spackle, a putty knife, and a sample pot of paint is not a cost, it's an investment. The return is 5 years of living in a space that feels like yours.
The math on this is almost absurd when you lay it out. Even if you somehow did lose part of your deposit, which, as we've established, you probably won't if you patch properly. Let's say the worst case is a $100 deduction. Spread that over 5 years. That's $20 a year, $1.67 a month, 5.5 cents a day. To not feel like you're living in a temporary holding pen.
The mental health ROI is enormous. There's a growing body of research on the psychological effects of personalizing your space. Having art on your walls, having objects that reflect your identity, it reduces cortisol. It increases sense of control. It literally makes your home function as a recovery environment rather than just a container for your furniture.
The bare wall is a low-grade stressor you stop noticing because it's always there. Like a faint hum you only register when it stops.
So let's pull this into a practical decision tree, because I want people to walk away with something they can actually use next time they're standing in the hardware aisle.
Start with the weight.
Weight is step 1. Under 2 pounds and you've got a smooth wall? Command strips are fine, but clean with isopropyl alcohol, press for 30 seconds, wait a full day before hanging. Don't skip the weight, 2 to 10 pounds. Monkey hooks, or OOK self-leveling hooks. The hole is tiny, the hold is strong, and patching takes 30 seconds. Over 10 pounds? French cleat with screws into studs or toggle bolts if you can't hit a stud. Patch and paint before move.
If you can't penetrate the wall at all, concrete, lease prohibition, personal preference, your options are museum putty for shelf items, magnetic paint for lightweight art, or tension rod systems if you want a full gallery wall.
Step 2 is documentation. Before you hang anything, photograph every wall. Close-ups, wide shots, good lighting. If there are existing scuffs or holes, photograph those too. Email the photos to yourself so they're time-stamped. This is your insurance policy.
Step 3 is the paint match. Get the color code from the landlord if you can. If not, chip off a tiny flake. Behind a switch plate is a good place, or inside a closet. And take it to a paint store. Buy a sample pot. Keep it under the sink. When you move out, you spend an hour touching up, and the walls look exactly like they did on move-in day.
Step 4 is practice patching. Buy a small piece of drywall from the hardware store. It costs a few dollars. Drill a hole in it, spackle it, sand it, paint it. Do it once before you need to do it for real. The confidence that comes from knowing you can make a hole disappear is worth more than any adhesive strip.
That's good advice. The fear of messing up the patch is probably half the reason people don't hang art in the first place.
The other half is just not knowing what's available. Most people walk into a hardware store, see the command strip display, and assume that's the only option. They don't know about monkey hooks or French cleats or toggle bolts because those are in different aisles and they're not marketed as renter-friendly. But they are.
The command strip industrial complex has captured the renter mindshare.
And to be fair, 3M, the company that makes command strips, they're not lying about the weight ratings. The ratings are accurate under laboratory conditions. Clean, smooth, non-porous surface, perfect application, stable temperature, no peel force. But those conditions don't exist in the real world, and they especially don't exist in rental apartments with landlord special paint jobs and south-facing walls.
The takeaway is, use the right tool for the actual conditions you have, not the idealized conditions on the package. And for anything with real weight, a small hole you can batch is safer than an adhesive that might fail and take the paint with it.
The deposit fear, while understandable, is mostly unfounded if you know your rights and you do the 10 minutes of patching. The law is on your side in most jurisdictions. Landlords count on renters not knowing that.
Which brings us to the forward-looking question. As rental periods get longer, 5, 10, 15 years for a lot of people, and build quality in new construction keeps declining, do you think we'll start seeing art-ready walls as a competitive amenity? Some luxury buildings in New York already include picture rails. It's a feature that costs almost nothing to install during construction, and signals that the landlord actually expects you to live there.
I think we might. The rental market is slowly waking up to the idea that renters are long-term customers, not temporary inconveniences. Picture rails, or even just a clause in the lease that explicitly permits small nail holes and provides the paint code that costs the landlord nothing, and it's a genuine differentiator. I'd love to see that become standard.
It's the "we want you to live here" signal versus the "we want you to pay here" signal. And right now, most rentals send the second one.
The final thought is, hang the art. The math works out. The law works out. The patching is easy. The cost of a few small holes is less than the cost of living in a space that doesn't feel like yours for 5 years. The fear is real, but it's not rational.
The deposit is a number. 5 years of bare walls is a life choice, and the life choice costs more. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1937, physicist Patrick Blackett, working from a cosmic ray observation post on the island of Espiritu Santo in what was then the New Hebrides, now Vanuatu, used a cloud chamber triggered by Geiger-Müller tubes in coincidence to capture the first photographic evidence of positron-electron pair production. The term positron itself was coined by Carl Anderson in 1932, but he'd originally wanted to call it the positive negatron, which mercifully did not catch on, though negatron briefly persisted in some European journals as a synonym for electron until the late 1940s.
Positive negatron.
That's so much worse than positron. Hilbert, thank you for that deeply unsettling etymological footnote.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want more episodes, we're at myweirdprompts.com and on Spotify. Hang the art.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.